Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining today's call. We are thrilled to have Congressman Don Beyer with us today. I'm Ed Meyer, partnering with Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation. Currently, all of your lines are in listen-only mode. Congressman Beyer is serving his third term as the U.S. Representative from Virginia's 8th District. He serves on the House Committees on Ways and Means and on Science, Space, and Technology, and is a member of the New Democratic Coalition. He was Lieutenant Governor of Virginia from 1990 to 1998 and served as Ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein under President Obama. We've asked Congressman Beyer to talk briefly about the New Democrat Coalition climate priorities and how investing in renewable energy strengthens our national security, makes our economy more competitive, and increases economic opportunity. Before we get started, though, I do want to cover just a couple of housekeeping items. You can participate in two ways in this call. You can email your question to us at info@businessfwd.org, and we will read it aloud. Please note the name of your business and where you live in your message. Again, that's info@businessfwd.org. You can also press 1 on your dial pad at any time to be entered into a queue to ask a question live to the congressman. We'll get to as many questions as we can. And please note this call is being recorded and there may be reporters present. Congressman Beyer, thank you again for joining us today, and please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Ed, very much. And thank all of you for taking some time out of the day to talk with me about climate change. First of all, I do represent Northern Virginia, which is, you know, the Pentagon and the Arlington Cemetery and Mount Vernon. And I have the best congressional district in the country because I live 15 minutes from the office. But I'm also a 45-year automobile dealer, so I was thrilled to be invited to be part of this Business Forward call because there are not many people in either party who have actually started a business, grown a business, you know, managed a lot of people over the years. And so I just want to give you a sense that I hope I know where you're coming from. I was president of the Chamber of Commerce 30 years ago, for example. But I'm also co-chair of the Climate Change Task Force of the New Democrat Coalition. The New Democrat Coalition is the largest caucus in the House, in the Congress, and it's our pro-growth, pro-innovation group of House Democrats. I often use a shorthand, this is the pro-business caucus and the pro-trade caucus. Virtually everybody that voted for Trade Promotion Authority a couple years ago when Barack Obama was president came out of the New Democrats, and we are now the group that's pushing forward on trying to find a way to get to yes on USMCA, you know, NAFTA Part 2. So we're the largest ideological caucus in the House. When I first ran for Congress in 2014, my campaign message was very simple, that I wanted to be the strongest voice that I could be on fighting climate change. You know, no sense of excess importance, just this was the job that I thought I had to do. And since 2014, you know, the science has just gotten much more grave. It's clearly climate change is the existential threat to everything we hold dear, to our prosperity, to our national security, future generations, a life on this planet. And as Greta Thunberg would point out, at least at the federal level, we've not done very much, certainly at the federal legislative level. And it's really up to us, especially those who lead in the business community, to help adapt to this threat before it's too late. I don't need to take you through all the science, but you know, the scientists tell us that we need to get to net zero emissions by 2050 in order to avoid the worst irreversible effects of the climate crisis. And you know, when Barack Obama was president, we had the greatest decrease in greenhouse gases as a percentage than any country in the world from 2009 to 2016. But unfortunately, virtually everything that our current president's doing moves us in the wrong direction. From getting rid of the Clean Power Plan, to pulling us out of the Paris Agreement, to banning the use, the phrase climate change and agency after agency. So we're in a hostile executive environment. But we're working on three principles, the New Democrats. First is that to combat climate change is going to require global action, but U.S. leadership. Yes, we know India, China, burning forests in Brazil, burning forests in Malaysia, Indonesia, those are all incredibly negative contributors to climate change and to greenhouse gases. But nobody's going to shape up unless we lead. We are still, this president notwithstanding, we are still the leader of the world on everything. The second basic principle is that this is an incredible opportunity. Adapting to climate change, to a climate-forward economy, is a great way to mobilize our economy and create high-quality jobs. And the third principle is that it's not just about climate relief. We've got to invest in the communities. We've got to invest in those coal miners that aren't going to mine coal anymore. We have to invest in our coasts, where just with the climate change that's already happened, we're going to be dealing with sea level rise and coastal rise. Norfolk, Virginia, I think, has seen 12 to 14 inches already, and downtown Virginia Beach is flooded probably half the days of the year. So we put together a first rung of 13 different bills. Of right now, I think 8 of them are bipartisan. We're trying to get all 13 bipartisan. We're not trying to do this from the far left. We're trying to do this from the center left with as many center right people on board as we can get. In no particular order, one of the first big things we want to do is look at carbon pricing, because every economist across the political spectrum believes that using market forces is the most sensible and perhaps the fastest way to change consumer behavior, energy use behavior. There are a variety of different approaches. With Chris Van Hollen in the Maryland Senate, U.S. Senate from Maryland, we've been pushing a bill that does a carbon cap and soon a carbon fee, but with a dividend, so that all the money raised goes back to the American people, same amount for everyone that has a Social Security number. This keeps carbon pricing from being regressive. You know, poor people, people with lower incomes are going to sometimes pay more, but if you give the dividend, as I say, 80% get more back than they put in. If you have a Range Rover and an 8,000 square foot house and a beach house and an airplane, you're going to get killed. But most people are going to do a lot better. And over the years, it will drive different behavior. Where you live, the kind of car you choose to drive, the number of discretionary trips that you take, how much walking you do, things like that. There are other versions. One takes the money and spends it on Social Security. Another spends it on infrastructure. And there are legitimate approaches. But hopefully, this year and next, we'll have a number of good hearings on carbon pricing, and try to find a way, a bipartisan way forward. The first big bill we endorsed was H.R. 9, the Climate Action Now Act, which would take the United States back into the Paris Agreement. It basically just forbids the U.S. government from spending any money to pull out of Paris. As most of you probably know, we were legally in Paris until 2020 through this presidency. So hopefully we will be able to get back on. By the way, as an aside, one of the things that Speaker Pelosi did was appoint a bipartisan climate change task force led by Kathy Castor from out of Florida to try to come up with climate change solutions on a House basis. So our New Dem coalition, our pro-growth, pro-innovation, is supporting that. We're not trying to compete with them. We're trying to contribute to them. I'm not going to go through each and every bill, but a handful of other points. We have a major bill increasing ARPA-E funding. You know, DARPA obviously was where the internet came from and many other remarkable advances. And ARPA-E is, a lot of research shows that it's the most important place right now for coming up with the new creative ways to think about energy in the years to come, and specifically how to adopt and adapt to climate change. We've got a bill that sets energy standards that's led by Ben Ray Lujan out of New Mexico. Elaine Luria, who's a fellow Virginian and Annapolis graduate and a ship skipper, is pushing a nuclear forward modernization bill to look at how do we make nuclear power once again, which is the cleanest of all power, of course, relevant, getting permitting prices down and making it more advantageous. By the way, a lot of the nuclear thing is thinking about micro plants, you know, the kind of nuclear power plant that runs a submarine or a carrier that instead can run a hospital or a campus or a large office building. We are looking at coastal resilience, a major effect on that. We have a wonderful bill called the Reclaim Act that Matt Cartwright from Scranton is pushing. That, again, bipartisan with Hal Rogers, a Republican from Eastern Kentucky, that would allow us to take the coal mining fees and reinvest in those economies to help them get the skills they need to make career shifts. We've got a lot on decarbonization, the so-called net carbon reduction. There are some really interesting things. I'm on a bill right now that is called the Blue Carbon Bill that's taking carbon out of the water. It actually was included in the Defense Authorization Act because it turns out that you can take carbon from seawater and turn it into fuel to run a Navy ship. And then we're looking at carbon from the air, and there's a huge, very successful project in British Columbia right now using huge fans, blowing lots of air past a specific point and pulling the carbon out. And a bunch of others. We actually had about 50 different climate change adaptation, et cetera, bills to choose from. And we picked these first 13 with the hopes that we could make them both bipartisan and pass the House by June of next year, all of 13, and all get them into the Senate, where we don't know. Mitch McConnell is a particular problem in our national life, but hopefully many of these bills can get through the McConnell bottleneck and be put on the president's desk. I will stop talking because I would love to answer your questions. I've got two of my smartest legislative aides here in the room with me for things that I can't answer. And Ed, I turn it back over to you for managing whatever questions are coming in.
Great. Thank you so much, Congressman. Really appreciate your comments. And now we're going to open it up to folks' questions and comments that are on the call. Again, you can email us your question at info@businessfwd.org. And we've already gotten several email questions that have come in while you're speaking. Or you can press 1 on your phone to speak live with the congressman for your question. So I want to start with a couple of we've got several questions that have come in around energy efficiency and sort of how we think about energy efficiency, in addition to renewables. And I'll ask two of those questions. One is, and I'll just kind of combine them together. One is from Diana Dirks in Austin, Texas. And Diana asks, would you say there's sufficient measures to encourage energy efficiency in addition to encouraging renewables? And then Russ Carnahan in St. Louis is asking, what is the part of the agenda for retrofitting existing public and private sector buildings since they consume 70% of all electricity and produce 40% of all emissions?
Great questions. On the efficiency, to begin with, there are many bills, I don't know whether it's a dozen or more, by Democrats and Republicans alike that are looking at ways to spur efficiency. I serve on the Ways and Means Committee and have been pushing hard for a green energy tax credit bill by the end of the year, which will include not just electric vehicles, but commercially electric vehicles, making permanent some of the tax benefits for other efficiency measures. This especially is attractive, by the way, to our Republican friends, because they don't like messing with the fossil fuel companies, but they know they have to do something, and so therefore they come back to innovation. And I mentioned earlier ARPA-E, Advanced Research Projects, whatever, energy. We marked up in the Science Committee this morning the ARPA-E Next Generation Act, which puts, a much bigger public investment into looking at innovative strategies, most of which are around energy. Most of the people on the call probably know that a refrigerator today uses half as much energy as a refrigerator in 1975. A desktop modem uses 10% as much energy as it did 10 years ago. 10 years ago, you put your hand on a desktop modem, it was hot. Now it's completely cool. There's much, much that could happen. And as a car dealer, I can tell you, we get way more power for much less fuel than we did even 10 years ago. For my friend Russ Carnahan, I was lieutenant governor when his dad was back in the day. Good to have his question. And I don't know on a private sector-wide basis exactly what's done. I don't know of any of our specific bills that are looking at retrofitting buildings. Again, in the Obama administration, there was a really massive effort. And some of this was from the stimulus bill in January 2009 to redo federal buildings, which all together probably is the biggest building source of greenhouse gas emissions. I know, for example, the Department of Commerce, massive changes just to try to make it the building much more energy efficient. On the private sector, I don't know of any legislation that we're doing, although I do know that city after city has adopted LEED building standards. Washington, D.C., I think every new public building has to be LEED certified, either silver or gold. And they, and as a consequence, you know, they're making enormous differences and changes in the greenhouse gas emissions. But Russ, thank you. We will look and see if there's anything that we should be doing here in Congress in terms of encouraging the retrofitting of other buildings, because clearly that's a major source. I don't want to misspeak, but I seem to remember that buildings may throw off more greenhouse gas than automobiles do. But that may be a car dealer's perspective, so forgive me. Ed, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. Alex Brousseau with Deloitte is actually asking about those green energy tax bills you mentioned, and really just asking what are the prospects for movement on those on that legislation in the Ways and Means Committee this fall. Can you give us a sense of your are you bullish on those actually getting some movement? Give us an update would be great.
Yeah, Alex, thanks for the question. Yes, I am bullish. And I think especially this year that, you know, our chairman, Richie Neal, of the House Ways and Means Committee, has good dialogue with Senator Chuck Grassley, Senate Finance, on a lot of these things. You know, we're really not interested in passing bills that then just die in the Senate. So we try to coordinate them ahead of time. You know, almost certainly we will have a tax extender bill before Christmas. And I think most of us on the committee are pushing for a green tax credit bill, green energy tax credit bill before that same time. And this will, it's not written yet. It will probably be an amalgam of seven or eight different bills that are floating out there right now on, you know, solar and geothermal and commercial electric vehicles, et cetera. But we'll be putting them all together in the next week or so. I've had a number of conversations with the chairman, and he seems very open to it. So I'm optimistic. It's one of the most concrete things that we can do that we actually think we can put on the president's desk.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. As you can imagine, we do have several folks that are asking about the Green New Deal, and so we'd love to get your, you know, point of view on that. We've got Alan Letts in Virginia and Stanley Chitwa in Illinois. And, you know, I won't read all of both of their questions, but essentially the question, Alan's question is asking, do you view the Green New Deal as a vision where the details will be filled in later by Congress, or is a detailed implementation plan with the budget for combating climate change and cleaning up our air and water? But just sort of your general thoughts on the Green New Deal and maybe how that compares with some of the plans that the new Dems are coming out with. That'd be helpful.
Well, that's a really important question, because I think the whole New Dem coalition is grateful for the Green New Deal and for its advancing and respectful of it, but recognizing that the Green New Deal is not a bill. It is not a set of concrete actions that Congress can take or investments that we can make. It's a vision of what we could be and should be doing to deal with climate change, which includes a bunch of important subsets on environmental justice, on what do you do with workers that have been left out. It's incredibly comprehensive. And what we've tried to do in the New Democrat Coalition, and also in the special task force that Nancy Pelosi set up, is translate many of the vision pieces of the Green New Deal into concrete legislative action, and that Democrats and hopefully some Republicans will vote for, and we can get signed into action. By the way, as an aside, Paul Tonko, who is a wonderful representative from Albany and on the Energy and Commerce Committee, chairs the Climate Subcommittee, has also been working on a huge package of bills, which he will tell you are probably intended for January 2021, that most of them will not, we won't be trying hard to pass them now because they mostly would not survive the Senate. So we all realize that with at least some of these pieces of legislation, we have to be thinking not long term, but at least middle term to get them signed. And so, once again, I think one of the misunderstandings that a lot of public has is say, are you for or against the Green New Deal? Well, nobody's against it. We're all for it. But there's not like a piece of legislation that you can sign and say, okay, I support this legislation. If you did, it would probably be 10,000 pages long to begin with. But the vision we're trying to realize in specific concrete pieces.
Great. We're going to go to a live question next. And just a reminder to folks on the call that you can press 1 and we'll call on you live to ask a question. And we're going to go down to Florida, to Putnam County, and James Bellamy. He's the owner of Demand Side Energy Solutions. James, you are live and can ask a question to Congressman.
Good afternoon, Congressman. Nice to speak to you. Glad for this opportunity. The question I'd like to ask you most of all, you were talking about retrofit. Retrofit, we do what we have is already Gator. We do retrofit for commercial HVAC and residential. That's one of our biggest carbon bullies we have is ACs, and we also reduce refrigerant. Refrigerant's another big problem with our carbon and our climate change. How do we go about getting retrofit more? Because that's a quicker and also puts more people to work.
Yeah, that you make a really good point. So I don't have a perfect answer for you. One of the bills that we have, I mentioned, was the coastal resilience. And I'm not sure that exactly addresses it. But there's another big piece on weatherization. You're recognizing, as you do, that if you can improve the insulation on a home, that can have a major greenhouse gas effect if you're burning less fuel, if you're more efficient in terms of both air conditioning and heating. I think we tend to do those things only after there's been a disaster, a hurricane or a flood or a tornado, something like that. But we need to be thinking about climate change as a slowly unfolding disaster and anything we can do on the retrofit. Because you can figure the vast, vast majority of buildings are ones that are already built. That dwarfs the number that are newly built with the new construction standards. So going back really does make a big difference. So thanks for elevating that. And I'll make sure that our climate task force is looking at that as we move forward.
So we have a messaging question from John Sutherland down in Monroe, Louisiana. And be curious in your response to this. John's says that recently I conducted a survey among 500 leaders throughout the Gulf South. While reluctant to use, quote, climate change, they all responded about torrential rains, flooding, unseasonable drought. And he's asking, do we need to once again shift the terminology to allow those in the front lines, but those who lack political cover, to better address these issues? So curious about your sort of experience in your district and elsewhere about the terminology and climate change. Do we need to shift terminology, or is that, do you think, effective?
Yes, it's very effective. It's a really good point. And it does depend on where you live. So I'm in Northern Virginia, right? You can see the Capitol from the end of our block. So I can talk climate change all I want. However, my dear friends, Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, the two Virginia senators, when they go do events in Norfolk and Newport News and Hampton with the Republican colleagues down there, they talk sea level rise rather than climate change. They can talk extreme weather patterns. We do need to – one of the dilemmas is, sadly, sometime over the Obama years – I certainly don't blame this on President Obama, but the issue of climate change became – highly polarized and partisan. In the summer of 2008, just before the Great Recession, George W. Bush was ready to roll out a number of climate change amelioration bills and policies. And then the Great Recession hit, and somewhere along the way, this became a Democrat versus Republican. We're moving back away from that now. There are very few climate change deniers in Congress anymore. But we still have to make it without backing off from our principles or our values or the work we need to do, any adaptation in language we can make so that it's less divisive is a smart thing to do. And as the caller or the writer mentioned, talking about consequences rather than something that's more thematic like climate change may be just the right way to do that.
Great. Well, we just got an email in from one of your constituents, Laura, I think it's Mandala. Pardon me if I'm mispronouncing it. She's the CEO of Mandala Research. And she says, hello, I'm a constituent and big supporter for Don Beyer and all he does for Virginians and all other Americans. It seems we have been talking about investing in renewable energy, but nothing changes much. I happen to think we need a reevaluation of what this means, perhaps changing what we call it. It's a bit of a messaging question, too. And demonstrating once and for all that workers in legacy energy will be retrained to benefit in these new technologies. Thank you, Don Beyer. How do you want to respond to that that question there?
Well, first of all, Laura, thank you for calling in. It's wonderful to hear from you, and thanks for the shout out on renewables. I think it's important not to undervalue where we are. Just looking at Virginia, you know, our Dominion Energy, who's sometimes controversial, has purchased and is now also building the largest solar farms that Virginia's ever seen. We've got major offshore wind coming off the coast of Massachusetts and Connecticut. And then we, for the first time now, Dominion's applied for all the offshore wind leases off the coast of Virginia Beach. And again, I don't want to misstate, but it's some significant percentage of Virginia homes will be able to use the electricity from that offshore wind, which, by the way, you can't see from the coast. So there's, and you're finding geothermal in a lot of different places. AES, big power company, what they're bragging about now is not their power plants, but they're building the largest battery storage facility in American California. Again, a key part of moving forward with renewables, because you know the dilemma with solar is the sun goes down at night, and the dilemma with wind is often it's windy at night, but you don't need the power then. And so things like battery storage are really important. The ARPA-E investments I talked about earlier are really critically important for showing demonstration projects of renewables that then can grow. And you probably know that at least last year, the number one, according to the Department of Commerce, job and demand in America was wind turbine technicians. And there are more people working in the solar industry than there are in the coal industry right now. So we've seen an awful lot of growth in renewables, but we clearly need a lot more, and we're doing a lot to stimulate that.
We've received a few questions about adaptation, and I'll read one from Francis Bouchard with Zurich Insurance Group. Francis asks that the climate debate is expanding to focus more on adaptation rather than just mitigation, and you've talked about that on this call, Congressman. Is there more of a political consensus on adaptation, and if so, what more could Congress be doing to enhance community resilience against climate change? And I'll just add, I know you've spoken about ARPA-E funding, and I think that's one area. My sort of add-on question is, do all the bills that you're presenting as part, that the new Dems are presenting, include an adaptation component?
So I don't know that all of them do, but many of them do. I've mentioned coastal resilience a couple of times. That's specifically an adaptation bill, is if you are in some place that's getting flooded regularly, you know, think Manhattan or Norfolk, Virginia, or Miami, Florida, you've got to be thinking, what can we do to adapt right now? To save these communities and the people that live there and the real estate investments that they have. Francis comes from Zurich Insurance, and I've been impressed with the insurance industry's very clear understanding that to hold down payouts for disasters in the years to come, we need to be doing a lot more both on prevention and adaptation. That it's wonderful to see the business community coming together on the side with the environmentalists to fight this together. So I'm grateful for Mr. Bouchard's question. And in the meantime, the biggest single thing on adaptation is funding, which is state, local, federal, business. So we'll be trying to access as many different pots, funds as we can to help people get ready. By the way, as a parens, one of the big struggling issues up here is flood insurance, because flood insurance has been heavily subsidized forever. And you have many, many communities, often people that are lower income living in flood-prone plains. The biggest standard is making sure that we don't build any new houses that are going to be subject to places likely to be flooded in the years to come.
Excellent. I'm going to go to my home city of Dallas, and from Paul Sawyer, owner of Paul Sawyer PG, who's asking, can the anti-alternative fuels lobby be stopped? Can all subsidies to fossil fuels end or be reapplied to wind, solar, and geothermal energies?
Well, I don't know that I can answer that and predict it. If it were up to me, you know, if we had a, you know, what do they call that, a benevolent monarchy, then sure, I'd end all the subsidies to fossil fuels today. But we don't have that. We have a democracy that's complicated, but we do have really significant subsidies to fossil fuel right now, way more than anything else. And the hope is that they will be phased out progressively in the years to come. The more pro-climate members of Congress from both parties that we get elected, the faster that will happen. On the anti-alternatives, again, that's a matter of just fighting back. ALEC was probably from my perspective, the most pernicious, who wanted to fight alternative energy sources in any possible way to prop up fossil fuel. They seem to be not quite as visible or as active now as they were 2 or 3 years ago. And obviously, in every state, you're seeing really significant expansions in alternative fuel. Sierra Club, by the way, has done great work, jurisdiction by jurisdiction, trying to get people to make a commitment to no fossil fuel electricity by 2035. I live in the city of Alexandria that took that pledge. I think County of Arlington's done it also. So I had to defend the U.S. climate change actions in Davos a year or so ago, and it was tough to do. Trump had just pulled us out of Paris. But happily, I could go back to what state and local governments are doing. You know, the U.S. never signed the Kyoto Treaty, but something like 1,000 local jurisdictions in America did sign it. You know, it was more symbolic than anything else. But it's important to see everything that we're doing at the grassroots level, because it's not just the White House or not just Congress.
So several, you've got a bunch of local business owners on the call, and a few people are asking about what they can do to help promote the work you're doing, to promote the work that the new Dems are doing. I'll read two of the questions. Jennifer Pugh from Harriman, New York asks, how would you address the local business involvement? And Allie from Michigan asks, how do business leaders who are interested in making changes to climate policy but do not necessarily support all of the Green New Deal maintain a seat at the table? So we'd love your sort of advice on how to engage and energize local business leaders in their communities on these issues.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And let me give you sort of the three-part answer. First, you don't need to be to sign on to every part of the Green New Deal. Some of it's clearly aspirational. Some of it's clearly long-term. Some of it imagines a different kind of capitalism than what we have right now. There are many folks thinking about what 21st century capitalism is like, but that's a big thing to say, here are 12 bills that deal with climate change, and also fix 21st century capitalism. You know, we're just not that smart. You know, there's a lot more to come. But number one is to elect people, state, local, federal level, and this is not partisan. They can be Republicans too, or Greens, or whatever. But elect people who share your values and your concern and your commitment to action. And by the way, the more Republicans that are pro action on this, the happier I am, because it's when we do things together, it's much more likely to be sustained. The next Congress won't try to reverse it. The other deal is actually looking at your specific businesses and seeing what you can do. I was, Ed mentioned an hour ago that I was ambassador to Switzerland for 4 years. And one of the things that was suggested to me by some Swiss person was that we do a greenhouse gas survey of the embassy itself. And they came in for 2 weeks and measured everything under the sun, and then came out with here's where you're using the energy, here's where your greenhouse gases are coming from, and it became almost like obvious, you know, falling off the table, what we needed to do to cut it in half, which we did right away. And I think virtually every business can benefit from rethinking how their business works. And sometimes it's tiny little things, like the gym where I work out eliminated the plastic cups. I said, bring your own water bottle, and we'll fill it. We'll provide the water. You bring the container. Or Congress eliminated plastic straws. To much bigger things in terms of, you know, parking or transit subsidies or telework or, you know, there are many, many, many different solutions if you're thinking about what you personally can do to affect greenhouse gases. The opening letter to the editor debate in this week's New Yorker, by the way, is how much greenhouse gas is emitted for 1 pound of beef. And I recommend that to your attention. There's the arguments small and large, and maybe that impacts it too. There are many, many, many little and big things that we can and should be doing in order to contribute to this. But probably the most important, though, I think, is getting a president who believes in it and makes it a priority, and political leaders at every phase who want to take it on.
Yeah, I learned firsthand from my middle school daughter what a VSCO girl is, and apparently it's all about using metal straws and shaming people that don't use metal straws and use plastic straws. So I've got an environmentalist as a middle schooler who also happens to be a vegetarian. So she's definitely on the way to being a climate activist, I believe. Catherine Rice from Alexandria, Virginia, asks, what incentives can the federal government provide homeowners to more readily participate in saving our planet? What federal incentives can be given to plant more trees and use carbon catch farming methods? So curious if you have a fairly specific question, but see if you have any thoughts on that.
Oh, first of all, it's wonderful to talk to another Alexandrian, but I don't know, certainly none of our 13 bills specifically address additional incentives to homeowners. Yeah, so much of it is we come back to our Alexandria City Council and encourage them to do something. Right now, we're already running $1 trillion deficits at the federal level, so it's tough to argue for new spending. And in fact, in the Nancy Pelosi Congress, we can't propose any new spending without also showing the offset, you know, where the money's coming from. However, that anything you can do to grow your own vegetables, just south of Alexandria is Arcadia that has a huge vegetable farm. One of our bills of the 13 is specifically agriculture related because the soil ends up being an enormously important carbon sink with the best and newest understandings of how agriculture should work. I met with the Virginia Secretary of Agriculture this morning, and she said one of her two big initiatives is just using the soil in a way that, you know, minimizes topsoil loss, maximizes the carbon storage.
Well, thank you, Congressman. I think we've reached about the end of our time, but I do want to give you an opportunity for any, you know, concluding thoughts or anything else that we did not cover on this call that you would like to close with before we sign off.
Ed, thanks. I really appreciate having the opportunity to talk with lots of folks about this. I think probably for me the most important insight or thought is that climate change and this excess of greenhouse gases didn't start yesterday or 10 years ago. It came with the Industrial Revolution. It came with massive expansions in human population. Nobody started off to be the bad guy in this. So much of our growth and prosperity and human health and lifespan has come from much more efficient, or much more abundant energy that we could use in meaningful ways. We're now at the point, though, that every one of us, recognizing that this is the, at least until shown otherwise, this is the existential challenging threat for humanity and the planet for this 100 years, is every one of us has to be part of the solution in some constructive way. Whether it's walking a lot more or choosing to live closer to work or driving a different kind of car, or even better, one of my closest friends bought a bike and rides to work every day back and forth just for climate change purposes. He's also lost about 20 pounds, which is good. That there are many, many things that we can do. And never underestimate the importance of the political leadership and the business leadership. If you're running your own business, That's really important, that outreach and living your life. So,
well, thank you, Congressman, and really appreciate your time with us today. And I want to thank everyone that joined us on the call. And please check your email for a post-event survey where you can let us know your thoughts on today's call. And if you missed any part of this call or would like to share it with other business leaders, you can visit the Business Forward website, businessfwd.org, to listen to the podcast and read a recap of today's call. The podcast is also available on Spotify, iTunes, and Google Play. So thank you again, Congressman, and we wish you well in this effort and getting these bills moved through Congress, and we'll be keeping an eye out and appreciate your efforts.
And if I could, one last comment, my favorite piece of wisdom is that whatever we devote our attention to in life grows and changes. If we devote our attention to climate change, we will make a difference, and it will be different.
Thank you. Excellent. Great one to end on. All righty. Well, thank you all. Good evening.